You're listening. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to sound like a broken record, but you are listening to KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. Listen sponsored. Now, become a member now. Become a member not only because everything you hear is straight, everything you hear is the late, everything here is great, but we also want you to become a member because we want you to get in there and put your shoulders next to the wall like we're doing. Help pay some of them electric bills, some of our toilet papers, our napkins, our portable plates, portable knives and forks. But better than that, even for the staff, the guys are working hard here at KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. And this is Screaming Jay Hawkins telling you why you got to do it. You got to do it not because it's an order, not because it's mandatory, not because it's a must, but it's because this is the only place where you're hearing the right stuff. You're hearing the truth, you're hearing the good sound, and you're digging people who knows what it's all about. So pick up on a few things and lay down some of them other things and just dig KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. And remember, I said so. I, Screaming Jay Hawkins. I ain't walking, I'm talking. I'm squawking. Become a member now. Become a member of KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. I'm about to sign off. Bye.
New year, new KBOO. Thank you to everyone who contributed and supported us during our KBOO Fights Back end of year campaign. With help from our community, we exceeded our $75,000 goal and will be able to continue bringing you grassroots, independent community radio.
Listen to Black Book Talk at KBOO FM every first Thursday from 11:30 till noon. Co-hosts OB Hill, Patricia Welch, and Emma Jackson Ford discuss African-American authors and books. That's Black Book Talk every first Thursday from 11:30 till noon on KBOO FM.
You're listening to Let's Talk. Let's Talk is a digital space for students at PCC experiencing disabilities to share their perspectives, ideas, and worldviews in an inclusive and accessible environment. The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions or positions of Portland Community College, PCC Foundation, or KBOO FM. We broadcast bi-weekly on our home website, pcc.edu/DCA. On Spotify, and monthly on KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM.
Yeah, thank you for agreeing to be a part of this interview. I am looking forward to being able to ask people about their experiences with education as people of color, because as a non-person of color, I don't face the same challenges or hurdles that many of the people in this world do, especially of the people in this country. I'll have you start by introducing yourself. Give me your name, pronouns, major, and occupation, and then your racial identification and how long you've lived in Portland. So if we'll start with Michelle.
Hi, I'm Michelle.
Hi, Michelle.
I'll say she, her pronouns. I identify as mixed. I have Indian ancestry and German ancestry and probably like North African ancestry too. I am in the EMS program, and I have lived in Portland almost for 2 years, but nice. I'm an Oregon native, so I've been around Oregon my whole life.
Where'd you live before that?
I'll just say all over the place in Oregon.
And Asher, what about yourself?
Hi, my name is Hannah. I go by Asher. My pronouns are she, her. My major slash occupation, I am currently a podcast producer. Want to be a multimedia film producer-ish. Still trying to figure that out. Racial identification, I am Asian. My parents are mainly from Hong Kong, but we also have a bit of family from Malaysia in general. I've lived in Portland for about 6 years now. But before this, I was in Singapore. I was living in Singapore for most of my life, but I was born in Texas. So, yeah.
Interesting. That is a unique combination of places to live and be from. Nikhil, introduce yourself if you'd like.
Hi, I'm Nikhil Rajmokula. I will take any pronouns. Like a fairy, I'll just pick them all. I am Indian, as far as I can tell. I've checked with my parents and my grandparents, as far as I can tell. 100% Indian. My major is video production, but I'm really just trying to get into filmmaking. And I've lived in Oregon for 5 years now, almost exactly 5 years now, because I moved here in July of 2020. Before that, I was in India from 2011 to 2020. And then before that, I was born in California, Bay Area.
Cool.
Nice. Congratulations on being here for 5 years. Or I'm sorry, either way. So what was the school experience where you grew up?
I'm just going to say, I'm going to throw it out there. I'd be like very, very white.
How so?
Yeah, I mean, like on the coast, there's a lot of like Christian faith on the coast and kind of variants of Christianity. It's more rural. So I guess the next minority would be people of Mexican descent. From like preschool to like eighth grade, there was like one Black girl in my school district. And then like a couple of other Asian people, not a very diverse place. And I had to explain to kids what chickpeas were when I was growing up. But it's so crazy to also think like now I can eat out more because there's vegetarian options. People know what tofu is. People know what like chickpeas are.
How did being a very substantial minority affect your education at that level?
I think I just remember feeling like I always needed to explain myself like so much. I had to like provide a bunch of evidence and like who I was and it's okay to be vegetarian. It definitely like affected like how I could participate in class and how well I did in class for sure. In my junior year of high school, we had like IB, the International Baccalaureate program at my school. And there is a teacher who was actively trying to get all the brown kids out of class and was telling us, hey, you don't belong in this class. You're failing my class. He had all these really punitive, stupid rules that he would throw out sometimes. Not throw out, but just like toss on us. If you were like late to class and there was an assignment due, you would fail that assignment. So if your bus was late or something, then we're like pulling students in through the window, trying to get them into class so they don't fail their assignment.
Assume the district did nothing about him.
Yeah, no, there was one Black kid in the class. And yeah, he was just overly like mean and snarky to this kid. And other kids in my class would be like, you're being too mean to him. It wasn't because this teacher was racist. And I did say something to my parents, but they're like, you have to be careful about what you say or accuse people of. And I'm like, why aren't you backing me up? So when we went to the principal, almost the entire class did, it was because the teacher was just grading everyone hard. Like there were two Chinese students and he was kind of leaving them alone. To me, I'm like, this is a model minority thing. This is why he's leaving them alone. It's because they're Chinese. One of them had a presentation, their PowerPoint failed. The PowerPoint was worth like 1 point or something. And then he just failed them because their PowerPoint wasn't working. So anyways, we went and we complained to the principal and I was like, I want my grade reevaluated because I'm failing right now. I have a D. I've been doing the work. I don't deserve this poor of a grade. And then the principal was like, no, we're not going to reevaluate your grade. I would look at my tests and the Chinese students' tests. I am literally saying the same thing, but because of my disability, I couldn't get it together to go in and be like, look at these papers. Anyways, there was a midterm. I remember this teacher had brought like donuts and bagels and orange juice. And I'm just like, you're trying to buy us. How is this happening? And nobody is saying anything. And I was like 16 or 17 and absolutely f-ing terrified. I was talking to one of my only friend that I kept in touch with from high school. And she's like, yeah, that is so f-ing racist. And to make things worse, he like got up in front of the class and was like, yeah, Oregon isn't even that racist compared to the South. Like in the South, you have the black people going into one line and white people going into the other. And I'm like, you're not helping your case, dude.
Like 50 years ago. No, been illegal talking, since then.
No, he was talking about like when he's visited the South. And I'm like, so clearly like he was knowing he was racist. I don't know. I feel like the coast is very conservative. Conservative too, and it's just I don't know why nobody else said anything about this. I think the next term I got like a B in the class instead of a D, so I think he took away the rule of you fail the assignment if you walk in late. So I feel like as brown people we have to not only meet the standard, we have to go like above it, because white mediocrity is like accepted and they're like yay or whatever, and just like with brown people you just have to keep,
you're not given that same grace,
you're not, yeah,
held to a higher standard.
Yeah.
So Asher, what was your experience like? Do you ever have anything similar?
Well, not similar, but I experienced both sides. So I was in kindergarten when I was in the States, when I was in Texas as a kiddo. Then I did experience public schools while I was in Singapore in Asia. That was a whole different kettle of fish. Schooling system in Singapore is very competitive in general, even for local students. So for me, as the only American Chinese kid, basically, in an entire public school of Singaporean Malaysian students, it was definitely difficult. I was made fun of for having an American accent, which was really rough, and just a lot of bullying. And it got really bad to the point where I was pretty much placed in the back of the class because the teacher just couldn't control everybody for making fun of me. So I was placed in the back of the class, and that did not help with my self-confidence at all. How teachers work in Singapore, and I bet it's changed over time. I bet it's gotten better, but back then they were very hands-off and they didn't provide any after-school help or any tuition or anything. They expect the student to go to their parents and be like, hey, I'm struggling with this subject. Can I get help for it? Then the parents provide tuition for the student or for their child, basically.
Does public school cost private money there?
That's a good question. I mean, I'm not sure. I never really checked into that at all. I just knew that it was expensive in general. Everything was just paid out of pocket, from classes to even lunches and stuff. We didn't have free lunches. Like, I would bring my wallet to school and I would pay for lunch at the cafeteria in the school. Like, they even took money from the students pretty much back then.
See, you're laughing at that, but that's just the normal. That's just normal here.
Yeah. What was your question just now, Michelle?
Like, what do you mean by tuition? Like, do you mean tutoring?
Tutoring, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
We call it tuition.
How do you, as a preschooler, be like, I'm not doing good in class to, like, your parents? Because, like, sometimes, like, kids don't even have that.
Kids don't even have that. Yeah, exactly. So I just kept on struggling for, like, 2 whole years. It was just really tough being singled out as American Chinese and made fun of just by stereotypes, an American kind of thing. Like, oh, you're American, you eat a lot of fast food. And I'm like, that's not true. I eat a lot of Asian food, but okay.
You eat the food that is in the city that you're in, just like everyone else.
Yeah, no, exactly. Just like everybody else. Like, they expect me to literally go to a convenience store and buy like a cheeseburger or something. And I'm like,
do they think you're flying in McDonald's from overseas?
I mean, we have McDonald's. So that's different.
No. A special American only McDonald's.
A special American only McDonald's. But that definitely changed me as a person and just made me realize, hey, that's not nice and it's not normal to be treated differently. I became a very quiet kid after my experience in public school for 2-3 years. And then I got placed into homeschooling school, which didn't really help either because I didn't get any other social skills during my middle school. Then I finally went into an American high school in Singapore in preparation to come back here to the States for college kind of thing.
Interesting. So you had the plan to come back here after school? Way beforehand?
Yes. Yeah, no. I was sick of Singapore at that point. I was sick of Singapore. I didn't really like living there at all, mainly because of the weather, but also because I just didn't have any friends or anything that I really liked in Singapore and just really wanted to come back here to the States to my roots, basically. Where it's like, all right, if people are going to be treating me like an American here in Singapore, then I'm just going to go back to America. But I feel like coming back here to the States, it didn't make anything that much better, especially when I went into college and hit that COVID era where everybody was blaming Asians for COVID. And that was a whole nother thing. Fun fact, I actually almost did get like, what's the word?
Assaulted.
Assaulted, yes. During COVID, while I was out for the first time in, I think, 2 or 1.5 years of COVID starting, basically. I went out to do some grocery shopping, was stopped by this really big white guy, and he's like, go back to your country, what are you Asians doing? And I was like, excuse me, sir.
And I was born in Texas. I'm more American than any of you.
He actually stopped and he was confused because I spoke proper English. So I guess that was a plus. So I was like, I don't know. Like, cool. What did you expect to come out of this mouth? Like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe he expected me to speak some broken English or Asian English or whatever. I mean, there's definitely both end of the spectrums kind of thing of like, you're in an Asian country and you're being treated differently because you're American. But then in America, you're also being treated differently because of the
You're Asian.
Color of your skin. Yeah, no, exactly. And how you look.
Nikhil, what was your school experience growing up like?
I think it was very different because I did the majority of my schooling in India, where most people look like me. So it was pretty normal. I remember like kindergarten and preschool in America. But I don't think that counts because kids, when you're in like kindergarten and preschool, you're like not a full person yet. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's all instinct. Here is this person, and I'm going to grab both of them, and we're going to run into a wall as fast as we can. There's no rhyme or reason to what kids do usually. It's just, hey, I'm having fun. Moving to India was a little funny because my friends have told this to me. The way that my accent sounds, it's a mix, right? It's a mix of Indian and American. Mm-hmm. And so my friends would make fun of me sometimes, but there's never anything serious. I did like schooling in India, but I went to a private school in India, so I don't know what the public experience was like. It was pretty normal, I think.
Did the private school teachers treat you any differently because you were American?
Most of the teachers were pretty good. They were pretty professional. There were a few who weren't. One notable example is my fifth grade physics teacher. He would refuse to let us write down what he was writing on the board until he was finished writing it. And then once he was finished writing it, he would give us 10 seconds to write it all down, and then he'd erase it. And he was gone after a week. Another very notable example is, I think, fifth grade onward, we had to learn a second language, and I chose French. Turns out I'm not good at learning language. Not one of my skills. Fifth grade to ninth grade, so that's 4 years of taking French. Failed most of those. My teacher for most of it was a 6'2" black man from France. I don't know what his accent was because I've never heard it before. I've never heard it again. And I could not understand a word that man said, English or French. Neither could anyone else. I don't think the other teachers could understand. It was this very thick, like French accent, like combined with wherever he was from originally. It just unintelligible. I had no idea what that man was saying at any given time. He also never learned any of our names. I was in this man's class for almost 4 years, and he only ever referred to any of us as guy. You go, hey, guy. He would point at us, and we had to figure out which one of us it was, because he would refer to both us and the girls that way. And he is a great guy. I don't know how he was employed for that long, because genuinely, I spoke to my classmates about this. I don't think any of them learned anything from that man.
Huh. I wasn't ended up in teaching in that situation.
I don't know. I had considered asking, but I don't know if I'd have understood his answer.
Did he speak Hindi?
Part of the thing is, my family is North Indian, but when I lived in India, I lived in Karnataka, which is the southern part. And in Karnataka, they speak Kannada. I don't speak Kannada. I've never spoken a word of it, but it was a private school, so all the teachers spoke English usually. Mm-hmm. There was one time in sixth grade where a woman came to speak to us, but she only spoke Kannada. Only 4 people in the class understood Kannada. There were 25 of us in the class. And she also looked like Gru from Despicable Me. I don't mean she sort of looked like him. She one-to-one looked like you took Gru out of Despicable Me. You like made his skin darker, put some hair on, and put him in a classroom. That's what she looked like, 100%. The entire lab was struggling to not burst out laughing. I had to go to the bathroom twice during those 40 minutes. I couldn't stop myself from laughing. My classmate was like crying from laughter because she looked like Gru. I never knew what she was talking about. Most confusing 40 minutes of my life. Before I move on to what it was like in America, Mary, you made a face when I said physics in fifth grade. I want to know what that was about.
Oh, yeah, because here in the American schools, you don't teach physics until senior year of high school a lot of the time.
Yeah, so the way that it worked in India was we had 9 classes every day. Each class was 40 minutes. First grade to fourth grade, we didn't have physics, bio, or chem. We had STEM, which was just like the basics of all three. Fifth grade onward, we had physics, bio, chem. I don't remember what my schedule was exactly. I remember fifth to ninth, though, because we had math, we had English, Lang, Lit, physics, bio, chem. We had to take coding until eighth grade, where I got to switch into either art or economics. I chose economics. PE was its own class, history, social sciences, and geography.
Interesting, because here we have, it's pretty much just general science up until high school.
That's what I've heard.
There are other classes available. Some schools will have an elective of some more particular thing, but I don't think almost anywhere, because here, fifth grade is still elementary school. I don't think there's any elementary school physics outside of elite elementary schools for nerds.
It was weird, though. I moved here 2020, and so I did my sophomore, junior, and senior year in America, which was very weird because I think the first big difference was I was unused to leaving my classroom. In India, you very rarely left the classroom unless it was to go to like a lab or PE. That threw me off, which was, okay, go to this class for this class and this class for this class. That threw me off.
Did the teachers rotate through instead?
Yeah, the teachers were rotating. Moving to America, though, was a little weird. Most of the teachers here, I've discovered, find it very odd when you call them ma'am or sir. But for me, that was like the norm. Mm-hmm. So when I first moved here, I used to get a lot of weird looks. They used to call teachers ma'am, sir. And I also just was really bad about using my computer because I had never used any technology in school. Like, in my old school, we had computers, but we weren't allowed to carry them with us. We weren't allowed to carry like our own personal computers with us to work on them. All of our work was done on sheets. And it was super weird. I will say the one nice thing about moving to Oregon, I guess, was that going into American school for those last 3 years, people were mostly like, oh yeah, welcome. Mostly. The school I went to was super rich white kids. So a lot of them were not very smart in the sense of like, they didn't know much about the world. The amount of students that asked me, do you speak Hindu, is incredible. Because that's not a language, that's a religion. You're mixing it up with Hindi. I can see how you mix it up. That's just not right.
Like, have an idea of what language. At least they have an idea.
Yeah, at least they weren't like, hey, do you speak Indian?
That's just what I was about to say. Mm. I've had a lot of students and teachers ask me, do you speak Indian? And I had to explain to them, not how that works.
It's the same thing with Chinese and Mandarin. It's like, get them too mixed
up. They're completely different languages. Which is just not fun. Very funny for me. I think the worst part was teachers don't expect you to start laughing at them when they ask you questions. So when you do, they become very embarrassed. I thought it was great. I did, for the longest time, have people continually ask me, oh, do you go to Indian restaurants around here? Do you have a favorite one? But to which my answer was, no, why would I? I get Indian food at home. I'm sick and tired of eating Indian food. Please stop giving it. Like in India, I meet with my friends and they're like, yeah, this is great. I have all this great food, but I want to go out and eat fast food. I want something other than Indian. Then I come here and my friends are like, oh, you can eat Indian food all the time. That's so lucky. No, Indian food is my normal food. I've eaten so much of it. I want less.
Like if I went to Mongolia or something and they were like, oh, are you looking for burgers and mac and cheese? And I'm like, no, that's what I make at home.
But yeah, basically, I didn't find it that different because I think once you get to high school, most people are not horrible to you. They're like, yeah, welcome.
Interesting.
That's my thing.
When have you seen others be othered? In what ways and how did that make you feel? If you see someone being bullied, like Asher, if you see someone being bullied for being Asian and you're like, well, they haven't treated me that way, but they're treating this person this way. How often have you seen that? And how does that make you feel as opposed to when someone treats you that way?
I've not seen that before, honestly. I've sort of just been treated as different, as the other in this scenario. I've never seen it the other way around at all, which I wish I have, but at the same time, I also wish I hadn't. I just wish that there wasn't that other thought process behind everything. There's them and then there's us kind of thing, which it's a sad thing, especially like with the world being so torn up about just
everything.
Yeah, exactly. What's another thing of race to keep us apart? There has to be more important things to be standing up against rather than the color of our skin.
Yeah, or just like what people look like in general.
Yeah, no, exactly.
It's sad because, like, kids aren't born racist. So then you hear garbage from, I don't know, an adult or an older sibling or a younger sibling.
Or social media.
Yeah. Or social media, yeah.
Social media, news.
Less so when I was a kid.
I was a teenager, probably like 11 or 12, when social media really took off in the way that it is most recognizable now, where I made a Facebook when I was 13, but I was younger than most people who had a Facebook at that point, where now that is just normal. Like, people are trying to be Instagram influencers at 8. So I can't imagine how much worse seeing that kind of thing is now than it was even 15 years ago or 30 years ago, because there seems to have been kind of like a peak and valley of things not being considered okay, of racism being assumed default as a bad thing that will get you fired or get you barred from office, that kind of thing. Now has kind of, both because of the political climate and because of our interconnected meanness in social media, even mainstream media at this point, has kind of disappeared into, well, now it's back and people are trying to reinforce those into their children again, which there have been racists and bigots for millennia, but I can't imagine how hard it is to make your kid not be racist now versus in the past.
That's where gentle parenting comes in, I feel like.
This is how I grew up, was that my parents exposed me to a lot of different cultures as a kid, that it's okay to be different. It's okay to be from a different country. You don't say different. You say, like, this person is from India, or this person is from Japan. This person's from Korea. This person's from China. There's different people of different culture, and they have different habits, and they're all from different parts of life. That doesn't make them okay to tease or anything like that. Mm-hmm. End of the day, we're all human beings.
Yeah. I grew up in a pretty small town in western Colorado, and the demographics of that are white, and that's it. I moved to Portland when I was 8, and Portland is infamous for being the whitest city in America by demographic. Like, just percentage-wise, this is the whitest city in the country. I was taken aback by how many Black people there were here, because in the little town I grew up in, I think in the entire 6 years that I was there, all the way through preschool, kindergarten, first and second grade, I remember seeing 2 Black people ever. There were a few Asian people. One of my very good friends was a first generation Chinese immigrant, and I remember being racist because I just didn't know that even what I was doing was racist at the time. I was just being influenced by the other kids who had been raised in an almost all white town by parents who were raised in almost all white towns. So they would be like, oh, in Chinese culture, they kiss you on your birthday, so you better run. And I was like, oh no, I don't want to be kissed. It's my birthday. Ah.
Which, heard of that culture before.
No, because it's absolutely made up. That's like the kind of thing that a 9-year-old makes up to lie to their 5-year-old sibling about.
Of course.
But from my perspective, there was never any blatant racism, but I was too young to know. By the time that I understood that that was really a thing that could happen to other people, I didn't live there anymore. So looking back on the things now, I'm like, wow, there was a lot of weird, questionable things from that small town in Colorado that I just didn't even see at the time. So then I went to Chicago, which is a very Black city. And then I came back home here and I was like, wow, man, look at all these white people everywhere.
I remember when I moved to Eugene for the first round of college, I was just like, where are all the brown people? Because it just wasn't place where brown people go at that time. I think there's definitely like a lot less racial minorities in higher education. I think it's changing, but yeah, that was a shocker. And then also I felt like Eugene was a lot whiter for some reason than the coast. But I feel like Portland is like probably one of the most diverse places that I've lived in. And I don't know what.
Oh, yeah. No,
being in Oregon.
It is substantially more diverse than the entirety of the rest of Oregon.
Yeah.
I mean, Portland was a red line city until.
Well, same with Eugene, too. And redlining there, too. But Oregon was designated like a white haven when it was created, like when the state was created.
Which is why it isn't California or Washington, basically, because it was founded as a white haven, a sundown state, essentially.
Yeah. People still brought over slaves, but they would hide them in boxes on the Oregon Trail. They'd have boxes, and then at night they'd come out and exist. Also, fun fact, like something that I learned, one of the first female property owners was a Black woman. Her husband, I believe, had bought her freedom. So they were like living together, had some kids, and then the husband passed away. And then like the racist neighbor was like, no, women can't own property, especially Black women. So there was like a dispute on whether she could own property. I would like to think that she won, not really sure. But anyways, it's just kind of crazy to think about that that was not that long ago.
What about your secondary education?
I feel like I was so overwhelmed and underprepared for college and just like finding resources, finding help, finding tutoring. It was crazy. Like I failed a lot of my classes my first term.
Was there support for you?
Support? Not really. I didn't find it till like way later, because I finally went to whatever accessible education center that they have. But like initially I was trying on-campus counseling because I was getting so anxious and I had like a really shitty roommate. But then they're like, you know what? You're having a hard time with school too. Why don't you try this place? And I'm like, well, I have before. I don't know. It was just like the second time trying to go get involved there, I think was just better because there were like the right people there for to help me out. And then I was like, whoa, learning accommodations? What? And things just got a lot easier. I remember like when I first got there, there weren't that a lot of minorities there. By the time I left, it was more diverse and there was a lot more student groups that you could be a part of to help find a place and find your people, find support.
Did the increase in diversity make it easier for you to reach out to those support networks or even just find unofficial ones?
Yeah, I think it did. I'm like trying to think through some of the professors that I had a hard time with. There was one that didn't speak English. So my first term of college, I had, what was math, 112. He didn't speak English.
What did Everybody he speak?
Greek. And everyone in the class had a hard time with that.
I mean,
and
did he, you say like, the trigonometry is all Greek to me, so...
Well, yeah, technically, sure. But like this person didn't speak English. So it was like very broken English. And then he would also, when we were super confused, he would like laugh at people asking questions. There was one professor that I had, I was trying to go to his office hours and then he like wouldn't be there. And then he would throw everything back on me. If that made sense. Like I wasn't doing whatever that was easy. And it was like shooting myself in my foot or whatever. I'm like, well, I'm trying to ask for accommodations and he wasn't following that. So I wasn't really sure if it was like racism or just sexism.
Do any of you feel like you are ever treated differently by people in secondary education than they treated white students or students of other races?
So define post-secondary education, because I think I'm thinking of it differently. Is it high school or is it college?
College.
Okay. Yeah. College, not really, because I moved over here to Oregon, went to PCC, and it was fine, because I think PCC in general just has a lot of different cultured students and teachers at the same time, and I was treated pretty similarly. I don't know, probably maybe there were other scenarios that just went over my head, because used to the whole scene of being different. And then it was just very refreshing to be like, oh, there's other students here that are also Asian, or there are other students here that are of different cultural backgrounds. And I don't feel as left out or anything like that.
I guess higher education, it's more liberal, or at least around here, it's more liberal.
Pretty broadly, yeah.
Professors like have traveled, they've just been around the world more, dealt with more people. They're not like your small town high school teachers that once in a while travel.
Go to the big city up the road for a weekend.
Yeah, there we go.
Students are actually trying to do their schoolwork rather than judge other people. That's literally how I take it as.
Yeah.
And they just tend to act as a melting pot more, because you'll go to the high school that you live next to. You'll go to the elementary school that you live next to. Right. But college, you can travel halfway across the state, halfway across the country to a whole different country. That does just create an atmosphere of more people with more differences than a high school in rural Oregon that has a total count of 300 students, of which five of them are a minority. Looking back at my questions. How has your relationship with your racial identity influenced your work or your creativity?
I don't think it's ever affected, at least, work in general. I hope it doesn't. Still being pretty fresh out of college.
A newcomer to the workforce. Education.
Yeah, still pretty fresh into the workforce, only like a year or so into the workforce. It's been good so far, and I hope it stays that way.
I don't know if it's ever affected my work in any way, especially because my first job was pizza, and my second job is this. But as for like my creativity, I think it does. For my degree, there's a couple of story writing classes I have to take. And I've done story writing before. I've done script writing, story writing before. And I've noticed that when I talk to some of my classmates and my colleagues, they don't look at things the same way I do, which is in that most of my classmates who I know who've like grown up in America, who lived in America, the ideas that they come up with and that they write down, it's very reminiscent of things that I've seen in America before. You can tell where their inspiration is coming from. Mm-hmm. You can tell that they're taken from here. And then when I've shown them my work a lot of the times, and my teachers as well, a lot of them will be interested in the work because they're like, oh, I haven't seen this before. I think that might be because I grew up in India and not here.
Do you know a way in which that manifests?
Mostly it's just in ideas, especially for like script writing or story writing. Ideas that will manifest or the way that you think rules or the world should be, those will often change. I guess stereotypes are a big one. I don't know if it's just because I grew up in India, but the stereotypes that I have with people are quite different than ones that people who have grown up here do. I will say that when I grew up in India, I only visited the States like twice. So I had stereotypes about America. But me and my friends, we didn't really have stereotypes about other places the same way Americans do, because we didn't really care. So I think that's one thing that helps. My friends will sometimes have like stereotypes in mind for characters that I just can't envision, and vice versa.
Interesting. Yeah, because there's a lot of places that the U.S. has close relationships with that India doesn't, and vice versa. I bet you 75% of American high schoolers, maybe even college students, wouldn't be able to point out Pakistan on a map. That is a large part of India's, at least their political situation. So it just comes up more there.
Also, I think our education system here is like really lax compared to other countries.
Geography-wise, too.
Yeah, especially. We don't get taught geography.
I know a lot of people, most people, I think, who haven't gone out of their way to look into it are like, oh yeah, geography is not my strong suit. And I'm like, I wonder if it's just the way that we teach it here. We're like, okay, Canada is our hat. Mexico is down. That's it.
Okay.
And then like everything else is China. Like that's
what
really.
Yeah,
like
four, and then everything else China. Yep.
The
yeah.
five countries that's are America.
And then also don't forget about Africa. Africa is a country, not a continent.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. All five countries. We got Europe, we got Canada, we got America, we got China/Mexico, and we got Africa.
China/Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Also Antarctica. It's where the penguins live, right?
That's true.
It's technically not a country, but yes.
It's, yeah, I was going
to
say.
Did you know that Argentina tried to claim Antarctica? All of the other nations were like, no, we don't agree to this.
Well, they learned it by watching us, and we learned it by watching the British.
Leave Antarctica alone. It didn't do anything.
Three different countries have tried to claim Antarctica. It's really funny. Gosh. None of them have succeeded.
The U.S.'s relationship with a lot of countries, especially as individuals who live your whole life here, are there's the places people go for vacation, there's the places rich people go for vacation, and there's the places that your stuff comes from, and other places don't exist.
Yep.
People go to vacation in Florida, rich people go to vacation in Switzerland and Australia, and then your stuff is made in China.
No, basically. Thailand.
Or Bangladesh. That's a big one I've seen.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Especially if you don't meet people from those places. You both can't afford to go there because flying overseas is incredibly expensive and getting a passport is very difficult.
I didn't think so.
It's often very difficult.
Okay.
Yeah. I've had one since I was born.
I haven't needed to renew it yet. That's why.
I've renewed it several times. You have to renew your passport every several years.
I thought it was every 10 years.
Like every 10
years.
It is that's
years.
What I was thinking.
I've had to renew it twice.
I don't know if that's a passport.
Passport, yeah. Not a fun process. It's just you have to sit in line. Or at least my experience was you just stand in line for like an hour and a half, 2 hours, and you're just standing and standing. then you go to the counter finally. The people there who are like, yeah, we don't want to be here either.
Sounds
we're gonna
like
make this
DMV.
As inconvenient. Yeah. DMV. It's like the DMV, except it's for your passport and it's worse.
Can't you just mail everything in? I swear.
Yeah, you can't actually mail everything in now.
That's
now,
what I heard.
So
interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And what about you, Michelle? Because you described yourself earlier. You've lived in Oregon your whole life.
Yeah. I don't know how to really answer this question. Creativity-wise, I've been exposed to like Indian artwork. I've been exposed to different artwork. So I'm like, let's try everything out or whatever. Mm-hmm. I feel like having multiple cultures growing up and not just like in my house, like being in the cultures that I was like kind of pushed into, because mm-hmm. I think it's made me like more of an open person, more willing to try things and more like friendly to people or just kind of more easygoing compared to some of the things that I've seen in the US. But yeah, I don't know how it explains like with work.
Well, you have a tremendously strong sense of justice and always have a push for making sure that people who aren't advantaged can get some advantages and some help and support and resources. So do you think any of that comes from how you were being treated as different?
Definitely. Just having like the model minority weight being put on me and not being able to live up to that, I think that's really impacted me. It's really all I can think of right now because this is like a really heavy topic.
Yeah, because we're all a product of our surroundings. So some people embrace their surroundings, some people reject them, and some people work to make sure that other people don't have to put up with things in the same way that they did.
Yeah.
You work for a community college focusing on advocacy and social justice and accessibility for people. So if you had been born a white kid in those rural places, this might not have been a path that you ended up on.
Yeah, I guess.
But I'm curious because I don't want to ascribe these things to you that are inaccurate or fanciful. But if anyone has that kind of thing, I'm curious.
I see what you're getting at. Honestly, right now, my brain is just like so overwhelmed with this topic and just everything that's come on today that I'm just like, ah. Honestly, like any chance I can get to speak up now, I try to, because there's been like moments where I've been silent and it's bothered me. But just also, it's like 2025. Why are we still where we're at?
Yeah, because that's an alternative way to look at this. As people of color in a space where you do get your voices put out more publicly than most people get to, do you feel like you have the obligation to more so than someone who is white or someone who comes from those privileged and advantaged places?
Yeah, I also have a question for you, Michelle. I don't know if you were still thinking about another question, but what can you do to help others or speak out on racism in general and just like safely too? I also feel like I find myself in situations where like that person's being treated because of how they look or the color of their skin, and that does not sit well. But at the same time, I also feel like I don't want to get myself involved and also become a target. I mean,
if you think about it, as a bystander, you are involved. You're a witness. You're involved.
I'm more of a target than just standing there.
Honestly, like if you're witnessing something, yeah, sure, you could be a target. But you have to also remember that for the most part, if you see somebody acting racist, you just have to like realize that at the core of everything is probably like fear to get people to act out like angrily. Mm-hmm. That's what you were talking about. But then also when you get older and you just deal with people like having tantrums or meltdowns, you're just like, okay, I've been through this before. I might get yelled at or screamed at. And sure, it's a little overwhelming, but this person's going to calm down eventually. And more than likely, they won't hurt you like physically, if that's what you're also worried about. I don't know if that answered your question.
Not exactly. What are some steps you can do, whether it's to de-escalate a situation where you are seeing someone who is facing racism, or to stop that sort of situation safely, especially for like us students of color? Yeah.
Yeah. I would say that like, depending on what it is, if there's like weapons or something involved, I would say you have to just bring in someone else that can help you with that. I'm also kind of like falling back on my EMS training.
Pepper spray is allowed.
Yeah. Pepper spray is allowed. I think also just trying to figure out how you can slow down situations, if that makes sense. So just to let them kind of calm down for a little bit, and it can take a while. You honestly just have to have a lot of patience for that. And then also you can leave and you can have other people leave and try to get that person, like not the racist, but
the other person that's victim. Yeah.
Yeah. And then also like there was a situation. I was visiting a friend in like Hillsboro, and like when I was living on the coast during the pandemic, there was a mixed couple who were moving out of the condo across from them. This girl like was Asian. Her partner was like darker skinned. Okay, so the driveway wasn't like super long to their condo. So the parking officer came and was like pretty much like about to tow them, but like they weren't there for even that long. And this guy like comes out and he's yelling profanities. He's being completely racist. And I was sitting on the balcony across from them. So I got out my phone and I called the police, and they also called the police too. But I felt like just being an observer, you can kind of also use your presence. Just because you're a witness doesn't mean that you can't do anything. You can just be there and your presence can be intimidating, if that makes sense. Because the police officers were looking at me and I had my phone and I like raised it up and I was like putting out there where they could see me. So I have this whole thing, including like the guy arguing with them about the parking getting car towed. But yeah, it was nerve-wracking, and like people coming out to look at the noise. And yeah, but if there's any situations that make you uncomfortable, just leave. Because sometimes like the best way of protesting or taking care of a situation is just removing yourself or removing that other person.
Yeah. What's a time where you actually have to stand up for yourself?
I don't know.
Or not. You know, or not.
Like, okay, if you think about it, there's another really great quote on like how racism is like a form of psychosis. So honestly, like if you're standing up for yourself, you just have to know that like there's limitations on this person who's acting out. I don't think that you're completely responsible for rehabilitating a racist, but it's good to stand out because they can be like, oh, I had this weird interaction that made me feel uncomfortable. And if they have the capacity, maybe they could be like, what was my role in it? It's so hard to self-evaluate.
It is, so, yeah.
All over the board. It's, don't you understand that the people who do this thing, who practice racism, are bereft? There is something distorted about the psyche. It's a huge waste, and it's a corruption, and it's a distortion. It's like it's a profound neurosis that nobody examines for what it is. It feels crazy. It is crazy. It has as much of a deleterious effect on white people as it does black people. That's by Toni Morrison. There we go. Yeah. So
that's a great quote. Yeah.
It is.
So it's just crazy, basically.
No, it is. Just, it is. Okay.
It's, racism is crazy, guys. It period.
It's like, true. It is a psychosis. Yeah.
All right. So we have just a few minutes left. Are there any closing thoughts that anyone has that they want to share? Asher, we can start with you if you have anything.
Yeah, I think like Michelle said, it's 2025, guys. Enough is enough. Stop treating other people terribly because of how they look and because of the color of their skin. Please just stop.
Yeah, just get out of the f***ing states once in a while.
Get out of the states once in a while. Stop looking at trash on social media. It's not good for you.
It isn't. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, that's the big thing. A lot of them are like, oh, yeah, America's the only place that actually matters. No, there's more. There's things beyond America that you need to deal with.
There's so much beyond America. Yeah.
Get out of the f***ing states and don't go to Cancun. Go to other parts of, like, Mexico.
Go to Asia. Go to.
If you have life issues, just go backpacking in Asia and you will get your figured out like that.
Go to Malaysia. Go to Malaysia, do some backpacking, hang out with some monkeys, and you'll be fine.
Don't hang out with monkeys. Monkeys are the worst. I hate monkeys. Those guys suck.
That's character building. That's character building.
I know. Monkeys. As someone who lived near close to monkeys, those guys suck. They're terrible. Don't be friends with monkeys. Hate them. 0 out of 10.
But it's character building. Let's put it that way. Hang out with some monkeys. Do some character building.
You are a racist. Please go hang out with some monkeys. They will beat you up. Monkeys are equal opportunity bullies.
Yeah, I know. They don't care what you look like or how you speak or whatever.
Learn from monkeys. Monkeys don't care about the color of your skin. They will throw poop at you no matter what.
Or dogs. Just dogs love everybody.
I've met some dogs who have learned from either their owner or a previous owner to be very racist. Monkeys, they're everyoneist.
Anyway, main point is
that to just get out a little bit more and learn from other people, learn about other people's cultures and get out there and meet some new people.
Experience the world.
Yes. Yeah, experience the world and not just like the touristy part of wherever you're going to that's super touristy, that they cater to Americans.
Actually go to the rural areas of the city or something.
Yeah. I feel like we need to get into volunteering again because we have to break the whole capitalist cult of productivity.
Individualistic.
Yeah. Storm that we're in.
Yeah, thank you, everybody, for agreeing to take time out of your afternoon to talk to me about this.
Thank you for listening to Let's Talk, Portland Community College's broadcast about disability culture. Find more information and resources concerning this episode and others at pcc.edu/DCA. This episode was produced by the Let's Talk Podcast Collective as a collaborative effort between students, the Accessible Education and Disability Resources Department, and the PCC Multimedia Department. We air new episodes bi-weekly on our home website, our Spotify channel, and monthly on KBOO Community Radio 90.5.
You know, on a really dark night, even in the North Carolina mountains, you might be able to pick up KBOO Community Radio coming to you from Portland, Oregon. This is SciCon coming to you from Charlotte, North Carolina, supporting community radio, radio that works for all of us.
Hey, stuck in a slump? Sometimes you gotta shake it out. There's a time for everything. And right now, it's time to dance. Join us for the Digital Rhythm Revolution. Every fifth Sunday from 7 to 8 p.m., we provide dance classics, new bops, dub, breakbeats, oddities, the electronica spectrum from hardcore to downtempo. Join us for the Digital Rhythm Revolution on 90.7 FM KBOO, Portland. Or join us online or stream anytime at kboo.fm.
Welcome to World Ocean Radio. I'm Peter Neal, founder of the World Ocean Observatory. I recently returned from Morocco, where I found a country so full of color and equanimity, so proud of its religious and cultural history, so alive to its emerging place as a small, developing, mostly secure kingdom, a mature nation with a foreign policy that matters. In September, Morocco became the 60th country to ratify the UN High Seas Treaty that is designed to protect marine biodiversity in the open ocean by establishing new high seas marine protected areas, provide through regulation and best practice the conservation of threatened ocean ecosystems, promote ocean research and resource sharing, and encourage cooperation among nations for ocean health. With the 60th ratification, a 120-day countdown began to January 2026 when the treaty will become international law. Morocco has every reason to be proud, just as all of us must be similarly gratified that such an endeavor can be established for a giant step forward for ocean sustainability and the future. As part of our tourist journey, we visited Volubilis, the ruins of a 3rd century BC Roman outpost, one extent of the empire, a trading place where Romans met Berbers, the intersection of cultures where exchange of goods, people, and ideas left behind a visible architecture and social interaction that oddly endures on a dusty olive-treed hillside as temple arches and mosaic floors in a setting that looks one way to the desert and the other way to the sea. Volubilis was designed, as are all cities in Morocco to this day, around the distribution and economy of water. It seems so obvious. How can any settlement in any climate, dry or wet, exist without the nurturing volume of water from the ground, the aquifer, the rivers, and the ocean, enabling life in the most challenging of physical conditions? There are the remains of conduits, basins, fountains, kitchens, sanitation, and gardens in arrays of sandstone, piled and carved, evidence of an underlying system of support that enable the place over time to that day of my visit. In the cities, that organizational principle remains, in the gardens and hotel atria, in the markets and in the mosques. The Grand Mosque in Casablanca, being a modern complement to Hagia Sophia in Istanbul, in its great hall and soaring interior spaces, intricate inlaid decoration, fountains and spaces for ritual, internal cleansing water as a fundamental tenet of Islam. The significance of water in the Quran is described as follows. Source of life, as essential for all living beings, emphasizing its role in sustaining life. Divine blessing, as a blessing from Allah, signifying His mercy and provision. Symbol of purity, as association with purity and cleanliness both physically and spiritually. As a metaphor for knowledge and guidance, nourishing the soul like it nourishes the earth. Environmental stewardship, as responsible use, promoting conservation and respect for natural resources. And spiritual cleansing, as ritual ablution before prayers, to underscore the importance of water as spiritual practice. And so as a visitor, I found an unexpected overt assertion of water as the essence of life for body and soul, for endurance, longevity, sustenance, and the future, built into the predominant religion and its practice, into the organization of government and civic architecture, into the national past and its future, and into the everyday understanding of what is most sustainable element of human survival. I did not first see it there until I did, and recognized the presence of its slow and steady stream, vital, enabling, nurturing, a most essential need. A very old paradigm indeed, not a historical vestige, but a present-day progressive reality understood and applied from the high Atlas Mountains to the Atlantic coast as an exemplary demonstration of the future we might well emulate, and soon. We will discuss these issues and more in future editions of World Ocean Radio.
World Ocean Radio is distributed by the Public Radio Exchange and the Pacifica Network for use by college and community radio stations worldwide. Find us wherever you listen to podcasts and at worldoceanobservatory.org.
You're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM and streaming on the web, kboo.fm. I'm Don Jacobson, and moving on, we'll be here in just a few minutes right after the news.